from the clubhouse to the tailgates and beyond.
Fly ball, deep left, gone!
Welcome to Brewers Weekly. Here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Hello, hello, welcome in. Tough Thursday, tough split for the Brewers. Wacky finish, 12-9. But we'll talk a little bit about that game here at the front end. We'll talk a lot about pitching here on Brewers Weekly. I'm Dominic Catronio. Thanks for being a part of us on your Thursday night. If you're listening to this live on WTMJ, reminder, this is a taped program. It'll be available on YouTube first thing in the morning on Friday over with ESPN Milwaukee. So if you're on the text line, if you're on the call line, sorry, not going to be able to hear it because it's taped. But you can join us for some Brewers After Dark all of the next week as the Brewers head to Colorado and Las Vegas. We will have post-game shows after every single game. We have all-night games coming up this week out in the Mountain and Pacific time zones. We'll talk about that series more specifically heading into the final segment of today's show. What I want to start with is just what went wrong today on Thursday as the Brewers fall 12-9 to the San Francisco Giants, end up falling into a split against San Francisco. We're going to talk about just kind of level set. What's going on with the pitching staff, right? A lot of injuries since the last time we've talked. What's going on? Who's closest to returning? What's going on with Quinn Priester? That sort of stuff. We'll also just give you the way too early look at the trade deadline and trying to make sense of what's going on around the league. And finally, we'll preview this road trip coming up and some, you know, interesting thoughts of, all right, you're dealing with the elevation. What does that actually mean for the Brewers? Now, as far as today goes, we will talk about Jake Woodford, I promise. Jake Woodford is not the sole reason the Brewers lost this game. I look at this game today for the Brewers, again, falling 12-9 to the Giants, where not anything went right in those first few innings, of course, for the crew. They showed up late to the party, but when Coleman Crowe gives up six runs, not getting out of the third inning, you're already setting yourself up for failure, right? And they had a tough time with Adrian Houser today. Granted, he didn't get out of the fifth inning. Until Churio obviously hit that home run and chased him from the contest. But Coleman Crowe is the story today. Not what happened late in this contest in mop-up duty for Jake Woodford, where Coleman Crowe, 2 1/3, 9 hits, 6 runs, all earned, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, and a leadoff home run from Casey Schmidt, the first of his career. Coleman said after the game, you know, he needs to go back and look at the strikes and the execution with 2 strikes, because that's the big thing to me. Of those 9 hits that he allowed today, 5 of them came with 2 strikes. And in that fateful third inning, all but one of the 5 base runners against him in that third inning reached with 2 strikes. I mean, he was not getting the same action on his cutter. He was not getting a lot of swing and miss on the curveball. He did get a couple of chases early from Willie Adames on that pitch. But this is sort of, not to, you know, kind of kick him while he's down, but this is sort of the knock on Coleman Crowe. And the reason why he wasn't been giving longer opportunities, he's go up, go down, come up, come down, where, hey, they fear, does he have a legit swing and miss strikeout pitch? Does he have something that you can go to? Now, you may be thinking, Dom, isn't that the curveball? That's what it's for. You're partially right, but the thing about a curveball, once you know it's on the scouting report, once you identify it out of the hand, it's a lot easier of a pitch to lay off. Now, we saw Haas chase one, we saw Willie chase one, but the point being is you need to have other complementary pieces that are meant to be strikes in the zone, like we saw with Robert Gasser. That's something we talked about in Wednesday's postgame show, saying your stuff needs to play in the zone, including the breaking ball, including the cutter. Today, Coleman Crowe's cutter was non-existent. It was getting hit. He was missing down the middle with it. And when you throw 92, you can't afford to miss. I mean, you look at the difference of his cutter in today's game, that is for Coleman Crowe's, versus yesterday, Chad Patrick in a 1-0 game. Chad's not throwing it much harder. I mean, 89, 91 with his cutter, but because he's precise with it on the edges, because he's able to get a different type of movement on his cutter than Coleman Crowe's is, he's able to get more success and live with some more mistakes in that regard. Coleman, he owned it after he spoke to the media. We appreciate that, but I think that at the end of the day, it was his fourth big league start. It did not go well, and the offense was meh, but it's hard to come back in 6 runs in Major League Baseball. It's just when you're already behind the eight ball that quickly, it's something to monitor moving forward of what the Brewers are going to do with the rotation, which we'll talk about in a moment. One of the other things that went wrong today, you know, before we get to the rest of the bullpen, you kind of wasted a really good day. Part of this is garbage time, of course, from the top third of the order, right? Yelly going 2-for-5 with a double. Churio going 3-for-4 with a pair of homers. Granted, garbage time, a little bit of that, I understand. Terang went 2-for-3 with a double, but he did not score a run being on base multiple times. And then the real question mark that I have right now is William Contreras. And I just want to point this out. I'm not trying to start anything. I'm not trying to sound alarm bells. But I just sometimes you got to call balls and strikes, as we say, right? And we all love William Contreras, watching him play ball. But just something is a little left to be desired right now offensively. You may be thinking, well, Dom, he gets a bunch of hits. He's hitting 282. What's wrong with that? You're right. I'm splitting hairs here. But if this team is going to be a threat in the postseason and get more offense from players that we expected them to get more offense from, William Contreras is one of those guys. William has one home run since the start of May. One. He has three doubles since the start of May. This is not a small sample size. To have four extra base hits in 124 plate appearances, just four extra base hits of those 31 hits, you got to decide what you want there. Are you happy with it being 284 and a 667 OPS since May 1st? If that's what you want out of your catcher, that's fine. That's way above average. I'm not trying to knock it. But if you're telling me that William Contreras is a power threat, we haven't seen the power. And it's just something I'm monitoring. He swung first pitch a lot. I'm hoping he's healthy. He's been catching a lot, too. That's the other point I want to make here. He clearly does not enjoy DHing, where there was some sort of conversation had, because he has not been a DH since May 16th, since the Twins series. All right, he's either had the day completely off or he's been behind the plate. And for the Brewers to be talking a big game during spring training, we got to make sure we take care of William. We got to make sure we take more time off for him. It's not happening so far. And I'm worried that these two things are correlated, that the power isn't there like you saw in 2024, and he's playing as much as he's playing. I wonder what the Brewers are thinking right now and how William is thinking. It could be a little mini funk that he's in right now. I mean, he had that great stretch at the end of May where he's getting a bunch of singles, but what do the Brewers need out of their 3-4 hitter? It's not singles. So do you make an adjustment in the lineup? That's something that I thought went wrong today. Now let's talk about Jake Woodford. So Woodford today was in mop-up duty. Okay, I want to remind you, he entered the game with the Brewers having still down at this point 6-3, entering in the top of the seventh inning. And this is also right on the heels of Grant Anderson having to exit the game after getting hit by a comebacker. Now, the first two batters did reach against Grant, so two of those runs are Grant's. But then, clean single by Matt Chapman, grand slam by Eric Haas, a blink, and boom, it's already now 10-3, and the game feels like it's over. What I see in the rest of this game, because obviously he allowed a couple more runs in that frame, didn't allow another run the rest of the game, but it's the least sexy position in baseball. And Pat Murphy said as such post-game, saying, Jake understands that's his role. Right, he's been a good teammate about it. He has not made a stink about it, because let's break the fourth wall here for a second. Let's all be honest with each other. Hey, he's not the best pitcher on this team. He is not meant to be, oh, if you do well in this mop-up role, you're suddenly going to be throwing in the seventh inning. Pat Murphy said as such today in postgame. That is not Jake Woodford's job. Jake Woodford's job is to hold the line, in the words of Charlie Green. Now, is it frustrating when he doesn't hold the line? Sure. But is it fair to hold Jake Woodford to the same standard as Trevor McGill or Aaron Ashby or Abner Uribe? No, it's not, because that's not his role. He's already entering the game down 6-3 in a game that you've now had two relievers had to leave the game suddenly due to injury. Okay, that's not great news, and we'll talk about them in the next segment. But what I see and what the Brewers had done, and when they initially acquired Jake Woodford, remember, it was an opening day trade for a minor leaguer in KC Hunt going to the Rays, Woodford coming to the Brewers. Now, part of that probably has to do with the fact that the Rays knew he probably wasn't going to be on their roster for very long. So the Brewers acquire him knowing the team always knows more than you and I know. Truly, there's always something percolating. And part of that is, hey, Rob Zastrzewski was not going to be available at the start of the season. Hey, Jared Koenig did not have a great spring training. They're going to be monitoring him. Then, boom, a week into the season, he goes on the IL. And then, little did you know that Angel Serpa would be gone a month into the season with his Tommy John surgery. But the way I see it is that the Brewers always acquire Jake Woodford for this moment, for mop-up duty. He is depth. because the other guys you have on the 40-man roster that can be optioned back and forth, with respect, I'm not trying to disparage these guys, but the Easton McGee's, the Brian Fitzpatrick's, the Carlos Rodriguez's, the guys that have options, the guys that have been on the fringes of the big leagues for the last couple of seasons, can you be moved up and down? Yes. Can Woodford be moved up and down? No, he cannot. So you hang on to that depth as long as possible. The Brewers are extremely consistent in telling you their method to their madness. They will hold on to every shred of depth they possibly can as long as possible. And today, that depth is being tested. And today, the conversation now becomes, okay, with Jared Koenig on the way back soon, Craig Yoho continues to pitch well down in AAA, Brian Fitzpatrick has made his big league debut, you have Easton McGee, you have Carlos Rodriguez, maybe sometime later this season we're going to be talking about Tyson Harden coming up, because two things are very true about today's game, and this will lead us into the pitching staff conversation. Number one, there is going to be roster moves tomorrow. Like between Coleman only going 2 1/3, you get an off day coming back from Vegas, and then you get a couple more off days until that long 17-game stretch. You get an off day coming up next Thursday when they come back from Vegas, and then the following Monday before the Cleveland Guardians come to town. So you might be able to survive with one less starter or rearrange with a bullpen day with Chad Patrick, whatever that may be. The second thing that can be true, and the second thing that matters here right now is, hey, there might be some injury-less moves here. You just need bodies right now, not let alone the fact that you're going to Colorado and Vegas. You just need bodies. And I think that, you know, Woodford threw three innings today. He's probably not available tomorrow or Saturday. So do you now use that bullet that you can only use once in a DFA because he does not have any options remaining? Or do you keep him in this mop-up role because you know you're going to Colorado and Las Vegas, two extremely hitter-friendly environments that you may need it again? I think Pat Murphy said it very well post-game today, and I want to reiterate it here too. Jake Woodford is not meant to be judged into a different role. Jake Woodford's role is mop-up duty. And as long as it lasts, the Brewers sort of understand, hey, probably not going to win this game, but somebody needs to throw the innings. And if you're wondering, why didn't they throw a position player? You need to be down by 8 runs to throw a position player. And well, the Brewers had that little rally in the 7th inning, which meant they couldn't throw a position player in the 8th or 9th inning, and then they had the rally in the 9th, and it didn't matter. But the point being is that mop-up duty should not be held to the same standard as a closer. And I see some of that on social media. You're never going to use Trevor McGill when you're down 3 in the 7th inning with 2 on and nobody out. That's not the situation. I know most fans know that, but I just need to reiterate that. That's not going to happen ever, regardless who's manager. You don't use your leverage arms down by 3 with 9 outs to getting ready to go for 6 more in a row in a hitter environment. So today stunk. What happened to Grant? What happened to DL? We'll talk about them coming up next and the status of the whole pitching staff after the break on this taped edition of Brewers Weekly on 620 WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's keep rolling with this taped edition of Brewers Weekly. Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Now, this week, the Brewers had a lot go on the pitching staff side of things, right? You had Chad Patrick throw 4 innings on Wednesday. You had Robert Gasser come up to make a spot start. He looks like he's sticking around for a little while longer. You've had Shane Drouin re-enter into the starting rotation. He will get the start on Sunday against Colorado. So all that depth is really getting tested right now for the Brewers, trying to figure out what they have available to them. How can they get outs while they wait for this tide to come back of, okay, Brendan Woodruff, who threw 3 up live on Wednesday. That's good news. Logan Henderson, he's running. He hasn't thrown off a mound recently, but he's got a lower back issue. They're hoping he's back hopefully in July, hopefully before the All-Star break. Then you've got an arm like Jared Koenig, who could be coming back soon. He's currently on a rehab assignment right now in AAA Nashville. He walked 2 last night. We'll monitor what his next go-around looks like. I'm sure they want to get him in a back-to-back at some point before they call him back up to the show. And then you had Rob Zastrzyzny active for 3 days, and he goes right back on the IL during his throwing program with his strained trapezius. So all this is to say a lot of movement, a lot of calls to Nashville, a lot to understand. Where does everybody stand right now? And the last thing the Brewers need is more injuries to their bullpen. D.L. Hall, Grant Anderson today. So D.L. Hall exited today in the 4th inning due to what he described as tightness in his pec and his subscap. So, you know, the back of your shoulder, lat, pec, you know, just kind of family right here. It happened while he was on the mound, and it happened as it got tighter and tighter. He really wanted to finish that last batter, and Drew Gilbert did not get the chance to do so, of course. But he's a little worried. They got some full imaging to do on him. Not clear yet. We'll find out more probably tomorrow when the team arrives in Denver. Do they want to put him on the IL? Can his body recover at the altitude quickly enough? Will he bounce back? That's another thing about going to Colorado that people don't really talk about. Your body, not only the adjustment to altitude, but I mean just little things like you don't retain water as well, so you need to hydrate. Your body doesn't heal itself. You don't bounce back as quickly there at altitude. So it's something to monitor for DL Hall. And then for Grant Anderson, his is a much more optimistic case. It was a comebacker, 90 miles an hour, hit him in the right forearm. I think I tweeted left, but it did hit him in the right forearm. He showed us, you can see the seams in the bruising. There's some swelling there for sure. There's a good welt on his right forearm, but he feels fine. Initial x-rays were negative, and they will get another round of x-rays just to make sure that when the swelling does go down that he's going to be okay. So he's going to be sitting on the plane right now, wrapped up in ice and making sure that they got some compression on it all night long to really manage that swelling. But let's say, as things stand right now, the Brewers only have seven in their bullpen. You know, because of the fact that they had to move Shane Drouin to the starting rotation, they're kind of in a modified six-man right now. Granted, I would imagine Coleman Crowe is going to get optioned before the start of this series against the Colorado Rockies, and they would have to call up a fresh arm for this bullpen regardless to get back to eight in the bullpen and five in the starting rotation. The real question then becomes for the crew, who's it going to be if you option Coleman Crowe? This is before we even talk about an IL for DL Hall. You know, it's kind of amazing to me that Craig Yoho hasn't been called on yet. His numbers are perfectly solid in AAA Nashville. He's got a 1 ERA in 16 games. He's appeared in 18 innings, a sub-1 whip. Like, everything on the surface level looks pretty good for Craig Yoho. Yet, for some reason, he hasn't been the one called. He's on the 40-man roster. He's got options remaining. That's not an issue. I imagine we're going to see him here pretty soon, given what's going on with the crew. They could use a righty, especially when Jared Koenig returns. He's on the 40. It's no big deal. You could bring back somebody like Brian Fitzpatrick. If DL Hall is going on the injured list, you're going to want to replace that lefty with another lefty. So that's where somebody like Fitzpatrick comes in. You figure it out when Jared Koenig comes back, because that doesn't sound imminent. Yes, he's on a rehab assignment, but that's probably not on this road trip that he returns. Perhaps it's against the Phillies or against the Guardians next week for him to return. But the guys that are on the 40-man roster right now down in AAA, there's only four pitchers currently on the roster, and that is Carlos Rodriguez. And he was just optioned on Sunday, of course, in Houston. So the only way he would be able to come back up is if he's replacing an injury. You have to spend 15 days down in the minors if you get optioned, unless you're replacing an injury. That's number one, so that could be DL Hall. You got Craig Yoho, we just mentioned him. Easton McGee, who's been up and down a couple of times this season, has been used a whole lot. And then the aforementioned lefty, Brian Fitzpatrick. He is the only lefty on the 40-man roster right now down in AAA. So that's something that's working for him. The only other lefty in AAA right now that, you know, could be a reliever is Drew Rahm, who is not on the 40-man roster. He signed a minor league deal ahead of the season. Rahm has been almost exclusively a reliever. He has made, exclusively a reliever, 22 games, 26 innings, 13 strikeouts per nine, something to monitor. I remember when the Brewers signed Drew Rahm, I said, keep an eye on this guy, because I saw his Tread Athletics, you know, one of the pitching labs that we talk about during the off seasons. That tape looked really good. I really liked what I saw from Drew Rahm. That's something to monitor. He's got a 3.04 ERA in AAA right now with good strikeout numbers, left-handed. Something to consider as the Brewers get ready to face these Rockies. Now, on the starting front for the crew, tomorrow it'll be Brandon Sproat, Friday that is. Miz goes Saturday. And then you're back on Sunday to Shane Drouin into this modified version of the rotation, which leaves decision time for the Brewers in Vegas against the A's. You'll likely have Kyle Harrison on Monday to open that series against the A's. Robert Gasser then on Tuesday, back-to-back lefties. And then Wednesday, how does Brandon Sproat do? Do you put him back on that fifth-day rotation? Do you have a bullpen game if your, you know, results allow it? Do you call somebody up to make a spot start on that day? Because I don't think Brandon Sproat's going to start that fifth day in Las Vegas. Could Woodruff be around that time? I doubt they want him to make his return there either. So that last day is something to monitor for the crew of what will they have available to them. Who do they want to go to from the rotation front? As for the guys injured right now, Quinn Priester, he had his rehab assignment transferred to rookie ball. Why would they do that? The reason is to be a little bit more flexible and to have a chance to kind of fudge things a little bit, to be able to, kind of like in spring training, you're able to roll innings a little bit quicker. You can re-enter guys if their pitch count gets a little too high. You are able to have a little bit more control on the product, because right now what they need from Quinn is length, and they haven't been able to get that in AAA, mostly due to his performance, of course, too. A lot of walks, a lot of hit batters that once he gets stretched out and then he goes back up to AAA, if the results are still not there, and I know Pat Murphy says he's pain-free, it seems like this has gone back and forth for months now, right? Where the thoracic outlet syndrome symptoms, they've always stopped short of calling it formal thoracic outlet syndrome. But for the command to completely go haywire, to be talking about this time he was pain-free, the other time he was still feeling discomfort, that's where I just get worried. And honestly, I'll stick my neck. I just sit here. I'm going, I don't know if we're going to see Quinn Priester throw a pitch this year. I just don't. The performance hasn't been there. The health clearly isn't in there. It's something that you need to get right the first time. And they've had multiple tries to get it right, and they still haven't got it. So I'm getting worried about Quinn Priester's availability for the rest of the season. Woodruff will be back by the end of the month, which is good news, as long as, you know, the feedback continues to be positive like it was today for Woody after those three ups on Wednesday. Logan Henderson, I wonder if the body can truly hold up throughout a season. And we've seen this multiple times now. Last year it was the flexor strain. He had a fractured elbow the year prior to that, right? And I think for Logan now having a back issue, I mean, great, at least it's not his elbow, but at the same time it's like, he was pitching so well. You need that depth right now for the crew to say, okay, when you opened up spring training, you were expecting Brandon Woodruff, Quinn Priester, Logan Henderson to be involved in this rotation in some way, shape, or form. And now all three of them are currently on the IL. Now, granted, to have Mizorowski and Harrison perform the way they've performed is certainly exciting. But now, beyond that, here's the service time currently of the quote-unquote six guys. This is including Coleman Crowe today. Here's, in order, their service time coming into the season. Jacob Mizorowski, 109 days. Okay. Kyle Harrison, a year and 102 days. Robert Gasser, a year and 136 days. Mind you, that is including most of it on the injured list from Tommy John surgery that he first went under for in 2024. Then you got Shane Drouin with all 76 days of service time heading into the season. You got Brandon Sproat, who had 22 days of service time coming into the season. And Coleman Crowe, who, of course, made his big league debut in Miami in April. You're going through it, man. It's supposed to be hard. This is not supposed to be, again, snap your fingers and everybody's going to be great. But they're all optionable. When you get healthy again, that will help the bullpen. Could you move Chad Patrick back to the rotation? I think you should seriously be considering it. But I don't think the Brewers see that as a possibility at this moment because they love him out of the bullpen. And the numbers agree. We talked about it in Wednesday's post-game show that 18 in the third innings and only one run allowed so far. It's been awesome. It's been awesome stuff from Chad out of the pen, but I just hope that he can shift that over this week, maybe into a spot start whenever the Brewers do need it. So that's where things stand on the pitching staff. Could they go get Tarik Skubal anyway? Maybe. Let's talk about the trades. Let's talk about my take from the other night, why I don't think this is a fit, and just give you some bats that I'm monitoring and what needs to be figured out between now and the trade deadline. We're rolling on with a taped edition of Brewers Weekly here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
I just wanted to give you some names. Let's get ahead of ourselves here when we're talking MLB trade deadline. Welcome back. This is Brewers Weekly. I'm Dominic Catronio. The Brewers are in this weird stretch where I know everyone assumes they're going to make a move. And the Brewers still have the third best record in the National League, despite having the offense that they have and all the injuries that we just talked about in their starting rotation. But August 3rd, Could they make a move? That is the trade deadline. It's a little later this year. That is, you know, partially due to the scheduling, and maybe it's something to monitor with how many teams are really going to be in it by August 3rd and that sort of thing. Let's just start with a reminder. You're not going to see a trade in June. I don't think anyway. Now, that would be a heck of a story. The reason why you don't see trades in June is because simply teams still feel like they're in it, right? Teams still feel like they have a chance to say, you know what, we can go on a run. We can go on a 15-5. We can go on a 25-10 and feel like we're in it heading into the trade deadline. So as everybody, you know, flocks to the Detroit Tigers right now because they've got some the tradable asset on an expiring deal in Tarek Skubal, could they actually make him available? I want to remind you, as bad as things have gone for Detroit, and while they wait on Skubal, who's hurt, by the way, and, you know, no one ever mentions that. That's another thing that I'm frustrated about. Oh, yeah, go trade Tarek Skubal. Yeah, he has the longest injury history prior to these two Cy Youngs, and now he had to do a brand new nano-needle procedure for arthroscopic loose body surgery. But, yeah, he'll be totally himself when he comes back. Like, sure, be my guest if you hope so. But here's the thing about Detroit. Despite everything that's gone wrong, despite everything that's going against them, they're only six games back in the wild card in the American League, right? Currently, that last wild card is being held by the A's at one game under 500, right? This will not last the whole season, at least I don't hope, because of the scheduling anomalies of how much interleague play we've had early in the season, and the American League has just been getting stomped when it comes to interleague play. But six games can be made up very, very quickly, because might I add, ask the Cleveland Guardians how it felt to make up as many games as they made up last season. Now, granted, there were plenty of head-to-heads, but at one point last season, Detroit was up 14 games in July in their division. They lost the division. Now, granted, they got the last laugh, defeating Cleveland in the wild-card round, but it can happen. Teams are not going to declare the white flag in June, most teams anyway, and especially not an American League team, which leads me to my next team that I want to talk about, the Houston Astros. You know, Yordan Alvarez is going to be subject to rumors this year and maybe next year too, because Houston's in a predicament right now where their general manager, Dana Brown's on an expiring deal, right? They fired their last GM after winning the World Series. Jim Crane marches to his own beat. He's a very different hands-on owner. And given they've already signed extensions to Alvarez, to Altuve, they've got Jeremy Peña looming at the end of next season. They do not have a lot in the cupboard right now as far as farm system goes. Hunter Brown looks like a star, but he's hurt right now. Christian Walker looks like it's been working out better this year than it did last year. But yet, they're sitting here at 28-35, not great, and yet they're only five games back in their own division. Now, Seattle should win this division. They just had their eight-game winning streak snapped last night against the New York Mets. But the A's, they're going to come back down to earth. They're at 30-31. No one else in the division, the Mariners in the AL West, are the only team above 500 right now. As for the wild card, Houston's lingering. They're loitering. I mean, they're at three games back right now. They are not dead in this. Because you look at the teams ahead of them. You got the A's in the last spot. We just said they're going to fade. Texas, divisional opponent. They'll see them plenty more. Baltimore. I don't know what to make of Baltimore. I can't figure them out. Minnesota. They will fade. And they will be pilfered from at this trade deadline like they were last deadline. Then it's Houston. Then it's Boston. So these teams are not going to, you know, punt and sell in June and even in early July. It's not until the end of July when you're really up against it. If maybe that number hasn't shrunk at all, if they're still five, six games back at the end of July, how good are they really? And are these guys going to actually become available? But I stand by my take that I said on Wednesday night, that just because the Brewers have the number one farm system doesn't mean that they automatically get to go after the number one trade target on everybody's big board coming up this August. I think it's a lazy take, personally. Would it be nice to have prime Tarek Skubal in this rotation? Sure. But at what cost, right? We said it the other day. If you wait until August 3rd to trade for Tarek Skubal, because you're going to wait as long as you can to make sure that he's healthy with this elbow issue, with this loose body, no matter what Scott Boras and John Heyman say about it, we haven't seen him on the field. We got to see him react to it. Now, if you make a trade for that on August 3rd, if you're getting one start a week for those last 7 weeks, maybe you get nine, maybe you get eight, maybe you get a couple of short starts in there, but like, is three players and at least one of them being an impact big leaguer worth it? And furthermore, remember, Tarek Skubal's getting one of the richest pitcher deals for an arbitration-eligible pitcher ever. So how's the money going to work? Prorated salary be right around $13 million, maybe a little less, depending on when you make that deal. Who's paying for it? You know, do the Tigers kick in more money and they get a better prospect? That's how this stuff works. But I stand by my take saying, hey, it's lazy to say, oh, they'll get Skubal. Like, yeah, they have the farm system to do it. Like, they need offense. And if you want to have the number one farm system, this is the year to have the number one farm system, because either A, you call up some of these kids and give them a shot, whether it's Lara, whether it's Jet, whether it's Cooper, or B, you expend from some of the other spots that you have extensions given to, maybe some of your lower level outfielders that, you know, you may be looking around saying, maybe this guy's available, something like that. But the offense, specifically from the left side of the infield, needs to be figured out. You know, I was looking at Nolan Arenado's deal, and the Diamondbacks just got hit with a zinger this week that Corbin Burnes had a setback in his Tommy John surgery. We may not even see him pitch this year. He has a strain in his lat, so he's out for a while at the earliest September. And if the Diamondbacks, as they're currently on the outside looking in, and if the Diamondbacks can claw their way to a playoff spot, yeah, they're not going to trade. I mean, they were one game out of the playoffs a couple of seasons ago, and that one game, the Brewers came back from down 8-1 and won the game, right? Every game matters against Arizona. So are they going to make somebody like Arenado available with 1 year remaining worth $15 million on that deal? Maybe. He'll be in his age 37 season next year, but he's had a great year. Or do you call the Texas Rangers and their oft-injured third baseman, Josh Young? He's got three more years of arbitration. He was a Super 2, so this will be his second year of arbitration this year. I mean, when he's on the field, he can hit, and he can help some power, and he's right-handed. That's something to monitor. But again, are you going to get somebody with multiple years of control while you have pieces of your farm that you're excited about? Do you really shock the world and go get like Gunnar Henderson? Now that won't happen. I don't think the Orioles will even make him available. And furthermore, the last thing you need is yet another shortstop right now. The Yordan Alvarez one, I don't think is going to happen. I also don't think CJ Abrams is going to happen. I also don't think that Luis Arraez is going to happen, if you want to ask the San Francisco Giants. If you go get Arraez, that doesn't solve the number one problem the Brewers have. Power. They need power. Everybody needs power, of course, but also, where's Arraez going to play? He's not going to play second. You got two great first basemen in Bowers and Vaughn. He's not a very good third baseman. I don't think it's a fit. DH, Yelly, right? So the Brewers are going to have to kind of look in the mirror, and they're also going to be waiting on other teams to kind of look in the mirror and say, all right, are we contenders or are we pretenders? And that won't happen until after the All-Star break. So be patient with it. Let's see what the offense looks like heading into the All-Star break. If they're still dead last in homers, I give you full permission to unlock like the doubt button. You know, it's like, ah, man, we just saw this version of this team last year. You need to hit homers. You just saw it in the postseason. I know it's cool to hit runners in scoring position and all this stuff. You still need to hit homers. They lost. They've had two games where they hit three homers or more. They've lost both of those games, which I think is a little ironic. Today and the sweep, the finale against the Nationals and Zach Littell back in April. It's just a quick preview of the trade deadline. I didn't want to go trade this guy. No, we'll do that once we get closer. Let's talk about the upcoming trip. Some history, some altitude, what to adjust to. Rockies and A's are the opponents as we wrap up the program after this on 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Late night with the Brewers. I'll be with you for all six games of this road trip to Colorado and to Las Vegas. More on that in a moment. Welcome back. Final segment of a taped Brewers Weekly here on this Thursday evening. The thing about this week and the thing about altitude and higher elevations and all that thing, The game's never over in one way or another. Are the Rockies historically bad like they were a season ago? No. Are the Rockies surprisingly competent as the worst team in baseball? Yes. Like, whose stock would I rather take right now? The Angels stock or the Rockies stock? They currently have the same record. I'm taking the Rockies stock, right? They have some pieces that you can get excited about. They're 24 and 39 right now. But for Colorado, again, it's not breaking news. They struggle pitching. And they struggle with, you know, keeping opponents down. Now, granted, Antonio Sensatella has been quite a revelation for them. He's one of their all-time leaders in innings and games started. This season, he's got a 1.30 ERA somehow. When I pull up the splits of his home and road this year, at home, he's still got a 1.88 ERA. He's only got 10 punch in 14 innings. Granted, all this is as a bulk reliever, right? He has not started a game this season. So when Sensatella comes into the game, he's been able to handle things at Coors. The rest of this staff cannot say the same about. You'll see old friend Jose Quintana, but unfortunately he's on the injured list right now. You've also got Kyle Freeland. He'll be going on Sunday. Michael Lorenzen leads baseball in losses. He's much better on the road than he is at home. He's given up the most hits in baseball. The Brewers will miss Lorenzen. But it's the same old song and dance for Colorado. They struggle pitching. Game times, late night, so stay up with us. We'll be on the air. Oh, we've got first pitch tomorrow at 7:40. That's Friday night, 7:40 Friday night. 8:10 Saturday night, and then 2:10 Sunday afternoon, looking at the upcoming schedule here. And then finally, 2:10. Yeah, I was right. I had it wrong. I was looking at Eastern time, at time zones in my head and all this stuff. The way that also the Brewers go into Las Vegas, those are all night games in Vegas because they're being played outdoors. They're being played at the Las Vegas Aviators Stadium, which is the A's AAA affiliate, while they're building the brand new ballpark there in Las Vegas down off the strip. It's part of Big League Week for Las Vegas to kind of drum up tourism and excitement for the upcoming week and the 2 years away from them having Major League Baseball in Las Vegas. Fun fact, the A's have already played regular season games in Las Vegas before. Back in 1996. Do you know why? 1996, they opened the season, the first six games of the year, in Las Vegas at Old Cashman Field. Now, some baseball veterans will tell you about Cashman Field and how the ball flew there. But it was because of, Al Davis, as the Raiders had come back to Oakland, and part of the deal was that they had to upgrade the Coliseum, and part of that is, of course, Mount Davis, the monstrosity, ugly concrete fixture of ginormous seats that ultimately were tarped. Al Davis, everybody in the East Bay hates you. But I digress. That's the reason why the A's have played games in Las Vegas before, is because they had to wait. The Coliseum wasn't ready for putting in Mount Davis to get ready for the Raiders to come back for the 1996 football season. Yeah, pretty funny. And now here they are moving to Las Vegas officially in two seasons' time. All of that is to say those game times will be at 9:05, 9:05, 8:05. So stay up late with us. And a reminder, if you're listening live here on WTMJ, Brewers All Access is the name of the podcast. Again, Brewers All Access, where you can find all the post-game shows, these Brewers Weekly programs, and whatever else we want to throw in there as well. So you don't have to stay up late. You can. You're welcome to. I know there's not going to be a lot partying staying up late with us, but we will have post-game shows for you after every single one of those games. Colorado, I mean, you should win that series. Can you get a sweep? It's always hard to do in Colorado. And this is something we've talked about a lot. This is the week that you got to kind of take advantage. It's going to be hard in Las Vegas. The ball flies in the PCL. The ball flies in Las Vegas, a Vegas ballpark. Kind of throw the numbers out the window. I'm really fascinated, though, to see Jacob Mizorowski in Colorado, right? Given, A, he's had all the cramping issues. Can his body adjust to the altitude? B, how much will his stuff really get impacted by the altitude, given he's so velo-based? Will the curveball take on a different look because it's just feed fastballs and cutters, Maybe. Gyro works pretty well in altitude. It's spin that struggles. And if you know what I mean by gyro spin, you're a nerd. Welcome to the party. I don't want to spend the end of the show explaining that, of just the type of spin that he gets on his cutter. But the way I see it for the Brewers, again, their pitching rotation lines up with Brandon Sproat on Friday. Big litmus test, but granted, can you deal with adversity, right? He's a breaking ball. He's an east-west kind of guy. The pitches are going to break differently for him pitching in Colorado. Can he make the adjustment? Miz on Saturday, Shane Drouin, another east-west guy, dynamic slider, dynamic curveball. Is he able to make the adjustment there on Sunday? And Vegas, dry, hot air, it's not so much about the altitude changing your pitch shapes. It's more about the size of the gaps, pushing 100 degrees on an outdoor stadium where it's always windy. That's what's going to make it tough coming up next week against the A's in Viva Las Vegas. Now, again, the Brewers are in this stretch right now. They've got 7 games down. They've got 6 to go of 13 in a row. And then they will get rewarded with 3 off days in the span of 2 weeks. So you get through this stretch, you get healthy on the pitching side, and things are going to finally start looking up for the crew as they hit a really important stretch in their schedule once they get through those off days, and the final 17 games of the first half will all be played in a row. So I'm excited. It'll be fun. And a reminder, I said this in the show yesterday, but for next Saturday's game against the Phillies, you may have seen that was originally a Fox game. It is now going to side-by-side with FS1, so that game is going to be available on Brewers.tv. So do not fret. It is not going to go anywhere that you're not used to. All right, that's the Brewers Weekly Show. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you stay up late with us this week on WTMJ for all your post-game shows and all the coverage from the Brewers heading out west. Produced by yours truly. Thank you for listening or watching on YouTube. Until next time, keep on swinging.